Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Lots of serious issues to be addressed in the second part of our program today with Gerald Salante. He is the publisher of the Trends Journal, and we'll look at all the different trends. And I'm going to take you on a lot of different journeys in that respect and look at everything that's meaningful to you and I. And none of this is being dealt with by the mainstream media. But before we get there, we have a lot of other things to share. And we always begin by talking about the latest things on health and healing and the environment. The internet is leaving children brain dead. Inventor warns, quote, Google generation who spend their life in front of screens are losing creativity and skills. Now, this is from John Stevens, and it says the following, quote, one of Britain's leading inventors has warned that, quote, a Google generation who rely upon the internet for everything are in danger of becoming brain dead. Trevor Bayliss, who invented the wind-up radio, and said children are losing creativity and practical skills because they spend too much time in front of the screens. The 75-year-old said he fears that the next generation of inventors is being lost, with young people often unable to make anything with their own hands. But he said children could rediscover vital skills if schools used mechano and other practical toys. Children have got to be taught hands-on and not to become mobile phone or computer dependent. They use computers too often instead of being instructed in proper play and creativity. I would agree with that. I think that the overuse of the internet, spending too much time on it, is extremely destructive. I believe that we should just have quality time without phones. When I go out, I never take my cell phone with me. To dinner, it would be impolite. It would show disrespect if I'm in that environment, suddenly talking on the phone to the people around. Also, it distracts from the quality of the ambiance, the meal, or any company I might be sharing. Same way with a walk. One of the joys of being in New York City is how many wonderful types of people you can meet and places to go to. And I just love walking from our corporate headquarters at 83rd and Broadway, where our studios are, walking down to Lincoln Center, going to the art theaters there, walking further down to Broadway, passing by the end of Central Park, and on Sundays walking down to Soho, getting to see all of the Manhattan. If I had a cell phone, I was on the cell phone, I would be walking, but I wouldn't be paying attention. So just think about going a day without your cell phone, without going on a computer, and being closer to nature. Aspartame, safety approved in 90 nations, but dangers are there, and it damages the brain. From Sayer G of GreenMed Info, there's a new study on aspartame that has the potential to reignite the decades-old controversy behind this artificial sweetener safety. As far back as 1996, people were writing about the potential link between aspartame and increasing brain tumor rates. In fact, its intrinsic neurotoxicity and carcinogenicity has been confirmed in the biomedical literature, and yet aspartame has been approved for use in hundreds of consumer products in over 90 countries and is still being consumed by tens of millions of people worldwide on a daily basis, despite the fact that over 40 adverse health effects have been documented. Well, the new study is published in the upcoming issue of the Journal of Bioscience, and it's entitled Effect of Chronic Exposure, that means daily exposure, to aspartame on oxidative stress in the brain of albino rats. And what they did is they checked the hypothesis that aspartame would impact or not impact neurological damage. And they found that chronic administration for 3 months of aspartame had 50% problems, all kinds of blood-brain barrier problems and brain problems. So if you want a healthier brain, don't use aspartame. An aspartame metabolite, methanol, also known as wood alcohol, is highly toxic. It is metabolized into the known human carcinogens formaldehyde and formic acid, which are known to be highly toxic to the central nervous system. And considering the fact that the normal human body temperature is around 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit, and that aspartame will convert to its toxic metabolites at about 86 degrees Fahrenheit, the finding that aspartame is neurotoxic is not a surprise. I used to visit with my publisher, my magazine publisher, once every couple of weeks, at the longest once a month. And sometimes these meetings would run on for 2 or 3 hours. During that period of time, we would sit in this large study that he had over on East 67th Street, right off Fifth Avenue. And he would drink between 2 to 10 diet sodas, all sweetened with aspartame. Now, what was of interest was that he was completely aware of the dangers of chemicals in the environment. I'd written articles on him. He had green-lighted some of the hardest-hitting articles in journalism in American history on the cancer industry, the AIDS industry. If there was corruption, we went after it. And he was up to date on everything. But what I would say is, you are aware that there's extreme danger in drinking all that diet soda. And he did not accept that. He felt that that was not a problem. It would later be a big problem. And when he was no longer drinking, when he was very ill, he said to me, he said, "I should have listened." Yes, he should have. Unfortunately, when people are very busy, when they're under a lot of pressure, they rely upon things that give them comfort. And in that case, he had given up smoking, and he was fueling his energy with diet sodas. There are a lot of diabetics and pre-diabetics that are also drinking a lot of diet sodas, filling their body with NutraSweet, artificial sweeteners. I suggest re-examine that. I always keep a bottle of colloidal silver in case there's any injury that could it can be used, or it helps with over 400 different microorganisms. Here is the latest on colloidal silver, because it's extremely important. What you have in colloidal silver is just silver atoms suspended in distilled ionless water. And the silver is small enough to penetrate on a cellular level and destroy pathogens of all types. It'll kill viruses, fungus, parasites, bacteria. It's very good at killing candida. But it doesn't harm healthy tissue. And if you had a burn, or if you had a let's say, an ulcer, a bed sore, by wetting the bandage with colloidal silver, it will make an enormous difference. And so most people don't have it, but here's some things it will help with. You can help if you put it on herpes sores. Warts heal faster. It's very good for bronchial conditions or walking pneumonia, and it's excellent if you have a defective immune system for short periods of time, I'm talking about, for a week, 2 weeks. It's very good for nasal infections. It's very good for if you have colds, flu, or bronchitis, and especially important if you know someone in this hospital who might be suffering from MRSA. MRSA is methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. It's a staph infection, and it kills thousands of Americans each year. So you definitely want to have the person spraying the infection with MRSA and taking it, spraying the MRSA infection with colloidal silver and then taking the colloidal silver internally as well. And I definitely recommend it for people who have age-defining illnesses. So that's another thing, colloidal silver. Also, lifestyle improvement and heart disease treatment may be better than drugs. That's the statement in this new article published in the Archives of Internal Medicine that simply shows that engaging in beneficial lifestyle practices and obtaining treatment for cardiovascular disease risk factors significantly improves your health, and in men, it also improves erectile dysfunction. This was a meta-analysis. Meta means many. And to take a look at lifestyle intervention, cardiovascular risk factors, reducing the risk of a heart attack, a stroke, congestive heart failure, and also to help you with erectile dysfunction. So it makes a big difference. There were 6 randomized clinical studies that were included, and this was done through the Mayo Clinic. So finally, we're showing something I've discussed many times on this program. If you clean up your diet, if you improve your cardiovascular function, if you enhance your circulation, then you will be more able to maintain erectile function. For children who have the symptoms called ADHD, and I disagree with that as an official diagnosis, because when I was growing up, I ran everywhere. You wouldn't have recognized how I grew up to what I am today compared to when I was a kid, because as a kid, I was very wiry, slim built, very fast, and I ran everywhere until I could afford, after having a paper route and affording and cutting grass, I got a Schwinn bike. But I don't know how much I weighed, but man, I didn't weigh a whole lot. And I was short. I only started to grow when I was a senior in high school. And but if I were in a class today, I would definitely have been diagnosed with ADHD, because I was always daydreaming. I was always looking out the window. I was always thinking about something else. And I was always very active. Unfortunately, today, anyone who has those qualities of life would be probably given a diagnosis and some form of medication. This is according to Science Daily and published in the peer-reviewed journal Applied Physiology, Health and Well-Being. A study of 400 children diagnosed with ADHD found a link between the children's routine, play settings, and the severity of their symptoms. What this means is that the children who had regular outdoor settings with lots of green, grass and trees, for example, had milder ADHD symptoms than those who played indoors, and an enormous difference. So when you consider that we have almost 10% of all children between 4 and 17 labeled as ADHD and on medications, then the question is there a brain chemical imbalance? The answer is no, there is not. Now, that doesn't mean that there might be kids that have a brain problem, but it's not based upon a brain chemical imbalance. It's more often it's due to the type and quantity of impurities in vaccinations and other environmental factors that impact the developing brain. So you have some kids that are slower, some kids that are more challenged when it comes to memory, and some that have physical tics. And just like like tardive dyskinesia, if you take Thorazine, and that's what millions of Americans were given in the 1970s and 80s for depression and anxiety disorders, they ended up with these facial tics. And that is due to the side effect of the drugs. So the bottom line is, get kids into nature. Get them playing outside. And then they will not manifest. They'll burn off that energy. Kids are filled with energy. They love running out and playing at recess. But a lot of schools don't even have recess. the kids have to put in extra hours. A lot of parents have their kids being tutored and taking special classes because they want them to succeed. Well, where is there an opportunity then to be a kid? And unfortunately, all that imbalance is going to manifest later in life. And finally, there's a lot of benefits to sesame oil. You've heard me mention many times on this program why sesame seeds and tahini, made from the raw sesame seeds, are so important. They're a rich source of the omega-6 fatty acids, flavonoid, phenolic antioxidants, phytonutrients, good fiber. So here's why you should have organic, cold-pressed sesame oil or tahini. You're getting lots of antioxidants, and that can protect your heart. That can help protect your body against viruses and aging prematurely. It helps with diabetes. There was a major study published in the Prairie Journal of Nutrition showed that sesame oil enhanced the efficacy of diabetic patients who are on meds. It helps with your skin. It helps with turn off inflammation, especially if you have problems with rheumatoid arthritis. It's very good for dental health. It helps prevent bleeding gums, dry throat, strengthening the teeth, the gums, and the jaw. And also, it is very good for the sinuses and sinus congestion. It helps with dandruff. Just rubbing sesame oil onto the scalp helps. In fact, when I was in Italy, and this is the first time I had seen this, I noticed that they use the olive oil before they go to bed at night. Some people do, massaging it into their scalp and their hair. And because they believe, and I believe they're correct, that it strengthens the hair and is healing to the scalp. Well, they're correct. It also has, sesame has good calcium. It is also cancer preventative because sesame seeds contain phytate, which is a powerful antioxidant, anti-cancer substance. So those are the latest things on health and nutrition. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. I'm going to give more extra time today to my guest because we have a lot to talk about and I don't want to rush anything. So tell a friend to listen in right now because Gerald Celante is going to be up in a moment and he is terrific. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting on the road. We'll be back in New York in about 3 weeks, and then premiering a major full-length feature film. We're going to go to our guest in just a moment. I just want to mention before we get there, though, that we are going to raise a little bit of money for our station, and I thought of something that would be fun, and I can do it only for about 10 days, and it'll be in September. And here's what it is. This is our premium. Last year, for our sister station WBAI, for $600, they got to come with me for an evening Broadway show, dinner, dessert, cab ride, the whole thing. Well, I'm going to do the following. For $200, you're going to get this. A gourmet vegetarian meal at New York's finest, in my opinion, finest vegetarian restaurant. A whole evening, generally it's about 6 hours or thereabouts, because we start around 6. Then we're going to go to an art film, and you get to select the art film. Jeremy in my office will get a list of all the films that will be playing that week or the week after, whichever week you're coming to. You could select the night you're coming. You could select the film you'd like to see. And it might be in Uptown, Upper West Side, at Lincoln Center, Lincoln Plaza, Lincoln Theater. Or it might be downtown the Village, might down Hudson Street with the Angelica Theater or Film Forum. There's about 5 really good art theaters in New York City. So we'll go from dinner to see an art film and then back uptown, where you end the evening with a gourmet vegetarian dessert that you can have there or take home with you, and the cab fares, and the meal, and the tip, and the movie. That's all-inclusive. You don't have to spend anything. And there'll be a little leftover for the radio station to help defray some of its expenses. So what a nice evening. Now, mind you, on Pacifica, Amy Goodman charges $2,000 to sit in the studio and watch her do her show and then have lunch someplace. And that's it. This is a whole evening where I'll be present. There'll be great conversation. And we did about 11 nights. It was enormously successful. It raised the station when I did it for the Broadway evening, about $30,000. This is for movies, because I wanted to make it affordable for more people. $200. If you'd like to join me, and I keep it on a given night, generally between 3 and 6 people, that's an ideal amount, so everybody has a chance to converse. You can't believe the diversity of people that are in this audience. From a retired famous ballerina to a judge to a professor to an Ethiopian cab driver, we have a full spectrum of people listening. But they're all just nice people, so it's a wonderful evening. All the fun, all the money, after the cost of the meal, and the cab and the movie, and the dessert, all that goes to the station. So if you would like to join me, and I can only do this in the month of September, call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065, and we will have a wonderful evening. You'll select the movie you want to see. Now, mind you, these are not your blockbuster films. These are the art films. These are far more interesting films. These are my favorite films, and it'll just be a wonderful evening. It's only $200. All right, I'm offering the same identical thing on WBAI right now for $300. So to help you out, and I know that some people couldn't afford $300, but $200 for an evening out, all expenses, if you did it on your own, you're going to spend what I'm talking about. You're going to spend close to around, if you went down the Angelica and back, that's $42 in cab ride alone, $22 down and back. I've done it a dozen times. A good meal with tip is about $40. And then the movie itself is about $15. So you're looking at, you're looking at $80. So not a whole lot left over for the station, but it's enough, and it'll be fun. So join me and a small group of people for a wonderful evening together with a great gourmet vegetarian meal, an art film, conversation, and if the evening's nice and we have time, we could walk. And that would be fun, too. 877-627-5065. We are limiting it to 10 nights because my fall is packed. And so I'll set those nights aside for the people in this audience. 877-627-5065. My guest is standing by, Gerald Salante. Before we go to Gerald, I want you to hear something that so resonates the truth that it caused this man to lose his job on Fox Network. Judge Napolitano speaks out.
Does the government work for us or do we work for the government? Tonight, what if the Constitution no longer applied? What if the whole purpose of the Constitution was to limit the government? What if Congress's enumerated powers in the Constitution no longer limited Congress, but were actually used as a justification to extend Congress's authority over every realm of human life? What if the president, meant to be an equal to Congress, has instead become a democratically elected, term-limited monarch? What if the president assumed that everything he did was legal just because he's the president? What if he could interrupt your regularly scheduled radio and TV programming for a special message from him? What if he could declare war on his own? What if he could read your emails and your texts without a search warrant? What if he could kill you without warning? What if Supreme Court justices no longer looked to the Constitution to determine the constitutionality of a law, but rather simply to what justices who preceded them thought about it? What if the rights and principles guaranteed in the Constitution have been so distorted in the past 200 years as to be unrecognizable by the founders? What if the 50 states were no longer sovereign entities, equals to each other, and parents of the federal government they voluntarily constituted? What if the states were mere provinces of a totally nationalized and fully centralized government? What if the Constitution was amended stealthily, not by constitutional amendments duly ratified by the states, but by the constant and persistent expansion of the federal government's role in our lives? What if the federal government decided if its own powers were proper and constitutional? What if the Constitution were no longer the supreme law of the land? What if you needed a license from the government to speak, to assemble, or to protest against the government? What if the government didn't like what you planned to say, and so it didn't give you the license? What if the right to keep and bear arms only applied to the government? What if posse comitatus, the federal law that prohibits our military from occupying our streets, were no longer in effect? What if the government considered the military an adequate dispenser of domestic law enforcement? What if cops looked and acted like troops and you couldn't distinguish the military from the police? What if you were not secure in your person, in your papers, and in your property? What if federal agents could write their own search warrants in defiance of the Constitution? What if the government could decide when you were and were not entitled to a jury trial? What if the government could take your property whenever it wanted? What if the government could continue prosecuting you until it got the verdict it wanted? What if the government could force you to testify against yourself simply by labeling you a domestic terrorist? What if the government could torture you until you said what the government wanted to hear? What if people running for president actually supported torture? What if the government tortured your children to get to you? What if government judges and government lawyers intimidated juries into convicting the innocent? What if the government could send you to your death and your innocence meant nothing so long as the government's procedures were followed? What if America's prison population, the largest in the world, was a cruel and unusual way for a country to be free? What if half the prison population never harmed anyone but themselves? What if the people had no rights except those the government chose to let them have? What if the states had no rights except to do as the federal government commanded? What if our elected officials didn't really live among us, but instead all had their hearts and homes in Washington, D.C.? What if the government could strip you of your rights because of where your mother was when you were born? What if the income tax was unconstitutional? What if the states were convinced to give up their representation in Congress? What if the government tried to ban you from using a substance in your body that is older than the government itself? What if voting didn't mean anything anymore because both political parties stand for big government? What if the government could write any law, regulate any behavior, and tax any event? The Constitution be damned. What if the government was the reason we don't have a Constitution anymore? What if you could love your country, but hate what the government has done to it? What if sometimes, to love your country, you had to alter or abolish the government? What if Jefferson was right? What if that government is best which governs least? What if I'm right? What if the government is wrong? What if it is dangerous to be right when the government is wrong? What if it is better to perish fighting for freedom than to live as a slave? What if freedom's greatest hour of danger is now?
And that was Judge Napolitano. For that, he got fired, I am told, because those are truths we just don't like to hear. There's a gentleman on the phone now from Rhinebeck, New York, who tells us the truth whether we want to hear him or not. We invite him because this is an open forum for people with the ability to express ideas that are independent. Gerald Salante. Gerald is one of today's pioneers in trend strategy. He founded the Trends Research Institute in Kingston, New York. He is the publisher of the Trends Journal that has been in publication for a long time, about 35 years. And he is accurate on so many of his predictions. Nice to have you with us today, Gerald.
Oh, thanks for having me, Gary. You know, I've used to be on Judge Napolitano's show, and we used to go out to dinner, et cetera. And he's exactly who he is, on the air and off the air. And the voice of freedom doesn't ring very loud anymore in this country. If you don't toe the line, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. And as now what we see going on, if you say anything bad about Israel, you're an anti-Semite. So not much has changed in either quarter.
Well, here's what we're going to do today, and I've set aside extra time for this. I'm going to lead into an area with some of the important insights from people who are not being recognized, but who I believe we should listen to what they have to say. We can accept or reject it, but we shouldn't intentionally self-censor ourselves. I'm going to begin with Israel, because that is something you just opened with, and I think it's important. And I'm going to begin by reading a letter. It's a short letter from Miriam Citrin. And here's what she has to say. Mariana Citrin. Horrors happen in the world, and we struggle to explain them and to fight to stop them. I learned this from my Jewish parents. I seek justice. But horrors happening in the name of those who have been historically oppressed, murdering people who have nothing, absolutely nothing, to do with that historical oppression, but using it as an excuse for murder, this is grotesque. We, the world, will no longer permit this lie. It must stop. This has zero to do with seeking justice for Judaism and all else. The world is imploring you, Israel. The world is demanding of you, Israel, stop. Stop the horror. Stop using our historical oppression to explain the horrors. We as Jews, organizing around the world, no longer permit you to use in our name, our identity as Jews, our historical oppression as a rationale for your warring and torture. We hereby take back the Jewish identity. You cannot speak or act in our name. I am sick every day. I fear the news and the images. I am so pained. I have trouble turning it on. Is that the intention behind the horror? That humanity is immobilized with shock? Celebrating the murders of babies, defending the murder of pregnant women, leaving them with nowhere to run when the bombs fall, shutting off people's water and electricity, hoping what? That they all starve or dehydrate? Who does that? It is so shocking that it makes one pause. Is it the pause that it is desired, that we all over the world just look on with our mouths open and chest in constant contraction? If that is the intention, it has been a success. Our collective mouths are a gap in horror. Immobility, however, has not occurred. Quite the opposite. Millions of people around the world are in the streets and all over the internet crying, demanding and screaming for Israel to stop. One of the most increasingly vocal groups are Jews, organized as Jews, demanding an end to the massacre, taking back Judaism from Israel. I do not base my political organizing on my identity, not as a woman, a mother, a daughter, or a Jew. Or at least I did not used to do this. Now I must. I'm not alone. Hundreds of groups identified as Jews against the occupation and war have sprung up over the past few weeks all around the world, demanding that Israel not use our identity to wage murder, demanding that Israel stop. Many Jews feel that Israel is taking their Judaism and refuse to allow this. Many others, like myself, feel forced to identify as Jewish, taking back an identity rather than allowing to be used in the name of war, torture, and murder. And then it goes on from there. Then this is a separate piece. It is prominent Jewish leader. This is very important, boy, for those at Fox and on the right who, or the corporate left, either one, who refuse to look at the history of this conflict, the progenitor to it. This is an eye-opener. The article is entitled Prominent Jewish Leader: Israel Intentionally Massacred Civilians 1948 to Terrorize the Population. From Washington Blog, quote, "The targeting of civilians was started by Jewish terrorist groups. Henry Sigman, an executive director of the American Jewish Congress, long described as one of the nation's big three Jewish organizations for 16 years. Sigman, an ordained Orthodox rabbi, was also the head of the Synagogue Council of America and a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. Born in Germany 3 years before the Nazis came to power, his family had to move from place to place to avoid Nazi persecution. His father was a leader of the European Zionist movement that pushed for the creation of a Jewish state. Last week, Sigman spoke about Israel war crimes at the very creation of the State of Israel. Quote, I'm quoting now, "Israel had pre-state, in its pre-state stage, several terrorist groups that did exactly what Hamas does today. I don't mean they sent rockets, but they killed innocent people, and they did that in an even more targeted way than these rockets do. Benny Morris published a book that is considered the Bible on that particular period. In the book, Righteous Victims, in which he said, I recall when I read it, I was shocked, in which he, particularly in his most recently updated book, which was based on some new information that the Israeli Defense Group had to open up and publish, that Israeli generals received a direct instructions from David Ben-Gurion during the War of Independence to kill civilians or line them up against the wall and shoot them in order to help to encourage the exodus that in fact resulted of 700,000 Palestinians who were driven out of there or forced to leave their homes and their towns and their villages were destroyed. This was terror, even within not just the terrorist groups, the pre-state terrorists, but this is within the military, the Israeli military that fought the War of Independence. And in this recent book that has received so much public attention, quote, Ari Shavit, he describes several such incidents too, and incidentally, one of the people who, according to Benny Morris, one of the people who received these orders, and they were oral orders, but he, in his book, describes why he believes that these orders were given to none other than Rabin, who was not a general then, but he executed these orders. He executed civilians, and the rationale given for this when Shavit, some years ago, had an interview with Benny Morris, and he said to him, quote, My God, you are saying that there was deliberate ethnic cleansing here? And Morris said, Yes, there was. And he says, And you justify it? And he said, Yes, because otherwise there would be no State of Israel. And Shavit did not follow up. And that was one of my turning points when I saw that. He would not follow up and say, Well, if that is justification to struggle for statehood, why can't Palestinians do that? In Israel, they made the heads of the two major pre-state terrorist groups prime ministers. So this distinction he's drawing is simply false. It's not true. the heads of the two terrorist groups, which instantly, again, going back to Benny Morse in his book, Righteous Victims, he writes in this pre-state account that the targeting of civilians was started by the Jewish terrorist groups and the Arab, and the Arab groups followed. And Sigmund says that the slaughter continuing today, quote, when one thinks that this is what is necessary for Israel to survive, that the Zionist dream is based on the slaughter of repeated slaughter of innocents on a scale that we're watching these days on television, that is really a profound, profound crisis and should be a profound crisis in the thinking of all of us who were committed to the establishment of the state and to its success. It leads one virtually to a whole rethinking of the historical phenomena, end quote. And finally, to this. This is a quote, Gerald, from the newspaper, the leading newspaper, Zionist's Haaretz in 1943. Quote, Zionism and Judaism is not one thing but two different things, and of course two contradicting one another. Zionism starts at the place where Judaism is destroyed. One thing is certain, Zionism is not a continuation or healing of wounded Judaism, but rather an uprooting, end quote. And then finally, for those who want to see what the head of Israel, David Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel, considered, these are his direct quotes. Quote, we must use terror, assassination, intimidation, land confiscation, and the cutting off of all social services to rid the Galilee of its Arab population. Quote, if I could save all the children of Germany by bringing them to England or only half to Israel, I would choose the second, end quote. So here is my question to you. Are we capable, as a world, as a nation, to understand the nature and history of this conflict and to seek ways of keeping both the Jewish population safe and the ability to live in a non-state of fear and the Palestinian people free and safe to live without restrictions and where they can determine their own quality of life? Is that possible? And if not, why? And why have we not looked at the true history of this conflict?
Well, in the last question, and then going back to the solution, why have we not looked at it and for what it was? First of all, if you criticize Israel, as I mentioned, you're called an anti-Semite. That in itself is disingenuous, since you also mentioned Zionism, which was the father of Zionism is Theodor Herzl, who is from Pest, Budapest, the eastern part of Hungary. When you look at every one of the Israeli prime ministers, Golda Meir, Ben-Gurion, you go up and down the list to Netanyahu, Sharon, everyone, Perez, Begin, everyone are all Ashkenazi. They are not Semites. They are Eastern Europeans. When you look at when all this began, it began in the late 1800s going into the 1900s when there was massive colonialism going on from Europe. The Portuguese, the Dutch, the Spanish, the French, the English, they were colonizing the entire region, including Africa. This is nothing more than a colonization. It's no different than Spain going to a country, conquering it to bring a religion to the pagans and making up any story that they wanted. They've made up this story. The story was, the truth of the story is, yes, they were slaughtered by the Nazis. The fabrication of the story is, what are you doing in, you know, a country so far away from you? Well, God gave us that. Well, God wasn't a real estate agent, and the Bible isn't a land deed. So the reason we can't see the truth behind it is because of the propaganda. Full-page ads run in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, papers throughout the world by Eli Weisel, the Nobel Peace Laureate. Jews reject child sacrifice 3,500 years ago. Now it's Hamas's turn. More than 1,000 years ago, Abraham had 2 children. One son had been sent into the wilderness and was in danger of dying. God saved him with water from a spring. The other son was bound, his throat about to be cut by his own father, but God stayed the knife. Both sons, Ishmael and Isaac, received promises that they would father great nations. With these narratives, monotheism and Western civilization began, and the Canaanite practices of child sacrifice to Moloch are forever left behind by the descendants of Abraham, except they are not. In my own lifetime, I have seen Jewish children thrown into the fire, and now I have seen Muslim children used as human shields, in both cases by worshippers of death cults indistinguishable from that of the Molochites. I call upon President Obama and the leaders of the world to condemn Hamas's use of children as human shields. To call this guy a Nobel Peace Prize winner is like calling Obama one after starting the Libyan war. To equate this with Hamas using people as human shields, I mean, here are the facts. The facts are, how many UN schools and shelters did Israel bomb, knowing that they had the coordinates of where they were? 7. And let us say, I do not agree with it, because Gaza Strip is only 7 miles wide by 25 miles long, with 1.8 million people jammed into it, that they're using these people as human shields, considering the massive destruction of several thousand houses and another 10,000 destroyed. So we'll say, though, we'll go with Eli here, and let's say they're using them as human shields. Okay, if you know they're using them as human shields, you're going to kill them anyway? How come nobody's asking that question? We have 1,900 or more dead Palestinians. Oh, you've seen them thrown into a fire, babies in Auschwitz? What's the difference if you bomb them to death or burn them to death? You're dead, you're dead. So the hypocrisy going on, and then coming out from all of the media. I even heard this guy Jake Tapper on CNN in the beginning of the crisis saying that the Muslims and these kind of people enjoy being martyrs, or words to that extent. You look what's going on now. Coming out of Hollywood, they have this guy Ryan Kavanaugh, who's a studio head, and it's in the Hollywood Reporter, and he's condemning this Javier Bardem and Penelope Cruz, who accused Israel of committing genocide. And he goes on to say, as a grandson of a Holocaust survivor, I know that anyone calling what's going on in Israel genocide versus self-defense is either ignorant or shouldn't be commenting, or is truly anti-Semitic. So this is the narrative. It makes his blood boil. Okay, fine, good for you. We're all stupid. You only know what's going on. As that person who wrote you the letter made the point, they are equating Judaism with Israel. Israel is a country that's run by politicians. It has nothing to do with Judaism. Just as America has nothing to do with Christianity. So you have to really separate the two. Is there a solution? I believe there is. And I believe that solution is a one-state solution. If everybody wants to continue to call Israel the only democracy in the Middle East, let's make it a democracy. It's simple. Pull down the walls. Take down the barriers. Make it an equal state, if you want to call it a democracy. So that's my solution to it.
All right, let's go on to another issue here. The latest report from a group of scientists are talking about, quote, scientists observe methane mega flare. Quote, an international team of scientists aboard the icebreaker Odin, currently north of eastern Siberia in the Arctic Ocean, is working primarily to measure methane emissions from the Arctic seafloor. Only a week into the voyage, the team reported, quote, elevating methane levels about 1,000% higher than background seawater. And it's a potent greenhouse gas. And they're saying that they're now seeing plumes coming off the seafloor, and that there are thousands of these plumes. Well, this is a massive amount of methane gas that is escaping because of global warming. Why aren't we paying attention to what is happening with the melting of the permafrost in Siberia and the boreal forests in Canada? Because all this is increasing global warming.
Well, you know, as you well know from the Trends Journal, you know, climate change is one of the major stories that we did in this edition. The reason why they're not paying attention to it, again, look who's running the government. You have a gang of 535 congressmen and senators in total telling us how to tie their shoes, and they're all paid off by the industries. Look where they get their money from. And it's just as what's going on. I mean, as we're talking about what's going on in Toledo, where 500,000 people can't drink their water. Oh, now the mayor took a glass of it, so he says it's safe. You know, he's going to be drinking that all the time. But where is it coming from? Well, all of the fertilizer runoff going into the lake that's creating the algae. Look at the trillions of tons of poisons that they're pumping into the air, into the water, and into the earth. Is it going to have an effect? Well, we need more scientific studies. Look what they're doing to our food crop with GMOs. Look what the people look like. Oh, by the way, quick story. We had a conference this past week up here in Colonial Kingston, History Before It Happens. People came from all over the world, Japan, Australia, Italy, Switzerland, London. And anyway, one person that came is a Catholic priest, and he heard me on one of the shows, and he heard me talking about how things could change. And I said, people have to find their dignity, courage, and self-respect. He said those words stuck in his mind, and he started looking me up, and then he saw me on a link with you. And he's been following you, and he's lost over 100 pounds. He said he was ready to crash and burn, and that he changed his life around. And he's so much more effective in the work that he's doing. And so I said, I know Gary Noel. I said, yeah. I said, he's a great guy. He said, no, he really changed my life. So I just wanted to pass that on to you.
Thank you.
And so why aren't people doing anything? Because they're not stopping wars, Gary. You think they're going to try to stop global warming or climate change? Everybody is, not everybody, but a large majority of the population, they're just stuck. They're afraid to move in either direction. They've lost faith in themselves. They lack the courage. So, yeah, anything could happen. They're not going to do anything to prevent this, just like they're leading us to war. They're destroying our economy. You think they're going to fix something like the environment?
Next issue. We currently have thousands upon tens of thousands of SWAT team raids. We have hundreds of thousands of police actions, frequently against innocent civilians who've done nothing. Everything from a woman in a shower, when the police barge in, New York City police, and drag her out. They got the wrong apartment, but they didn't apologize. They took her down naked. Drag her in the hall. We have a woman who did nothing being shot and killed. We have people being killed, tasered. We have a man in a courtroom who's talking with the judge, and suddenly he's completely shackled, feet and hands, and suddenly the guy just comes up and beats the hell out of him, one of the guards. The judge doesn't say a word. So we're seeing now something that many people are concerned and frightened about. Not just the militarization of the police, but so many police acting sociopathic and getting away with it. Their unions protect them. The other officers protect them. The courts protect them. They literally can kill with impunity today. Your thoughts?
Well, you said it's sociopathic. The fish rots from the head down. Look what this... Why? What's the big deal about police killing when a whole nation wages immoral wars and slaughters millions. So all they're doing is following their leader. I mean, you saw what happened when the Iraq conflict. I hate that word, by the way. You see, I used it because of the knee-jerk reaction of seeing in the media all the time. These aren't conflicts. These are massacres. And you saw with the Iraq massacre, 1 million people, and now it's heating up again, and they rolled out the criminals in charge of doing it, such as people like Dick Cheney. And he's being featured on all the media defending their actions. So you say to yourself, as you look at it, well, if they can do it, I can do it. This is what it's become. And then, of course, we know that as part of the military cyber industrial complex, that they've taken all of this worthless machinery that we've spent trillions of dollars on in equipment, military equipment, and now they're reprocessing it into the police. And we have, again, another major story in the Current Trends Journal written on the militarization of the police forces in the United States by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. And by the way, I want to make this very clear. There is no one that I respect more for geopolitics and economics than Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. And his site is paulcraigroberts.org for people that want to see more information about it. So as we look at it, this is all of what's going on. The entire nation has a war on terror. The war on terror is the war on the people. Again, it was started at the top. That the fish rots from the head down is more than just a metaphor. It's a fact. You follow your leaders. They set the agenda. And that's what it's become, and that's what Judge Napolitano was saying when you played that piece about how now the military could take over police duties. We saw it with the Boston Marathon murders. They closed down an entire city. They went door to door without any search warrants. You saw it happen. This is called, by the way, you see, all of these pieces, Gary, are connected. You go back to the panic of 08, for example, when all of a sudden we had to bail out banks because they were too big to fail. In capitalism, there is no such thing as too big to fail. In fascism, however, that's called the merger of state and corporate powers. So by all of their deeds, it adds up to America has become a fascist state.
Final thought. You and I discussed at some length in previous programs that the BRIC nations, and as opposed to the American concept, were going to be trading in the near future in their own currencies and enhancing that with 22 countries in Central and South America beginning to trade in their own currencies and getting away from the dollar as a reserve currency. Where do you see the dollar going? Where do you see, and by the way, you and I were both right. There's now official lawsuits where banks were artificially manipulating the price of gold and silver. That's why it's been held down. Those should be much higher than what they are. But now they're in court, and now the truth of it is going to come out, and we will show that we were right. Gold should be around $50 an ounce. So, gold should be at about $3,000 an ounce. Silver should be about $50 an ounce. And that's before the dollar no longer has a reserve currency status. What do you see with the dollar as the reserve currency, and the value of gold and silver?
Again, it's all tied together. What's going on now, for example, with the sanctions against Russia, that is accelerating the risk to dollar dominance. Because what's going on now is that the Russians are taking their money and they're putting it into Asian banks. You look at the dollar share of global reserves, Gary, has shrunk to, it's about 60% now from 72% in 2001. And by the way, sanctions are acts of war. So now you're going to start seeing more and more of the Asian nations, Russia, and the BRIC nations, as they already have at the last meeting in Brazil. By the way, it was the same time when when Putin was flying back from Brazil, and that missile or whatever took down that Malaysian plane over Ukraine, they actually crossed paths almost at identical times within sight of 2 minutes. What they did at that BRIC meeting is they set up in Shanghai a new central bank for the BRICS. When the dollar loses its reserve currency status, this is going to be the official end of Empire America. It will no longer be able to print money to wage wars and to keep its economy afloat, because people aren't going to be buying its paper. And when you mentioned about gold and silver being manipulated and there are lawsuits, let's be adults about this. We know it's a fact proven. This is not a conspiracy theory. The fines were paid. They rigged the Forex markets. Those are the currency markets being traded every day at the tune of $5.3 trillion. The LIBOR rate, that's right, the interest rates that we all pay on mortgages, cars, student loans, etc., totally rigged to the tune of, by the way, by the time they found it, around $700 trillion. We know the stock markets are rigged with the black pools, the algorithms, and the high-frequency trading. So, of course, gold and silver are rigged because it all goes back again. If the currencies are devalued for the level that they should be at, people will be pouring out of them, going into gold, and the dollar loses its value, as does the euro, the pound, and other currencies that are just built up on printed money. So they don't want people to go into gold or silver.
Gerald Salante, nice to have you on today. We look forward to the next trends, and we'll also look to see how accurate you are on all these, because you have been hitting over a 90% accuracy rate on all your major predictions. Gerald, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and keep up the great work. A lot of people love you, Gary.
Thank you. And Gerald can be reached at the publication, the Trends Journal, and trendsresearch.com. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you for listening. Let's say hello to Yatrice Lead. Hi, Yatrice.
Hello, Gary. Two subjects today. Lots of feedback. More than 150 grassroots organizations and the other U.S.-Africa summit in Washington today. We'll get a report. And two police unions came out swinging yesterday, defending the officers involved in the chokehold death of Eric Garner. We'll discuss what they said.
Good. Yatrice Lead right now.